I'm Emma Louise Webb, and you're listening to Behind the Screams podcast.
Hey girls, it's Lindsay and welcome to Behind the Screams. Today we're talking about the 2008 British survivalist horror, Eden Lake. Today, as always, I'm joined by Lucy and Ian. How are you both?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Good, yeah. I'm just waiting for Ian to... I don't have a pun today, by the way.
What?
All I'll say is, I love you, Ian, but fuck you for choosing this movie.
Listen, just wait till Martyrs comes up, that's all I'm saying.
Oh god.
I think this is bad, that's even worse. Sup, bitches?
I know we're not quite getting into the film just yet, but I feel like you drip fed for us that this was like super gory or something. Like, I feel like I'm looking forward to Martyrs because I feel like it will have a better story than this.
I don't remember saying that this was super gory. I remember saying this was super grim.
Yeah, grim, sorry. Yeah, that's what you said.
This is grim, right? I wasn't lying.
The face says it all.
Okay. It's going to be a long episode.
It's going to be a very short one. I'm only kidding. So, I don't even know what I'm going to say. So if you're here, like, and you're likely here, come follow us on social media. We're on Twitter at Behind the Screams. No, we're not. It's at Screams Behind. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Behind the Screams. We're on TikTok at Behind the Screams Podcast. We are on Patreon. You can subscribe at the £1 tier or the £5 tier. And we're on Twitch. What are Twitch days, boss?
Twitch days are Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays.
Very good. So, yeah. And, oh.
She's fucked it. Hey.
A terrible host.
None of this is getting cut. It's all staying in.
You bastards.
Lucy, where can people find you online?
It's like, fucking move on, quick.
Yeah. Find me on Twitter, Lulu_Pew. You can also find me on Twitch, Lulu_Pew, streaming Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Literally half an hour before recording, I did a special with my friend Rev, reacting to Life is Strange 3. And listen, my queer ass lost my shit on that. So if you want to see that VOD of me quite literally just going cuckoo bananas... Enjoy. Go to the Twitch channel and enjoy that clip.
So between Ian and Lucy and Dave, who takes over our Twitch on the Saturday, you can catch these two on Twitch just about every single night of the week. Is that right? Yeah.
Just Tuesdays, right? Neither of us stream on a Tuesday.
That's true. Maybe one of us needs to do that, just so the people can see our beautiful faces every single day.
Time for Lindsay to start up her Twitch.
Yes!
Tuesday
slot for Lindsay. Let's start petition.
Terror Tuesdays.
Terrifying Tuesdays with Lindsay.
That's pretty odd.
Let us know if you want it.
Isn't that the name of your OnlyFans?
Just a sight of my naked body terrifying.
Same.
So, today's choice of Eden Lake was...
Do I not get to do my socials, like?
Oh,
no?
Sorry. Well, I'm never sure if I should do yours or not, because you're always like, oh, well, I'm never actually on mine, and I'm just like, should I even give you this little...
Give me this opportunity, it's my fucking show!
You're me so fucked.
You just use, like, Behind the Screams as your own social media anyway, really.
No, if you'd like to follow my personal social media... You can find me on Twitter at IanForrest12 with 2 R's. There you go. Now you can fucking move on.
Well, I was actually moving on to you because I was going to say this film was Ian's choice. For this month, we're choosing our films around Women's History Month. Films that discuss issues pertaining to women, directed by women, written by women. Ian, what made you choose this film for this month?
Well, apparently, I've been told that my links for this month to this movie have been pretty tenuous. But the reason that I chose this movie, or I'd moved this movie in for this month, because I felt like it gave us a good opportunity to discuss. And what has definitely been something that's pretty upped for the last couple of weeks in the world is to discuss how sort of women are viewed and by general public, and, you know, how they can be objectified and women's safety and things like that. So I thought that was going to be a really good, I thought this movie would be a really good topic sort of starter to link off into a discussion a bit about that. No, so 10 years now, is it?
No, I'd still say that's pretty tenuous.
It's literally the first half hour of the film.
No. I disagree.
But for everyone at home, apparently I've really pissed these two off by picking this movie. So, yeah.
I was screaming at my TV watching that. I was screaming at you. Like, I was proper fuming.
This is just a horror film.
Okay. I put you through Birdemic, though, so I can't say shit.
Sure. Like, apparently I've done this really terrible thing. I don't really know what. I don't really know what I've done.
We're only teasing you a little.
Let us know.
No, I don't really hate you. The points that I've got for discussion, like, this is a really great film to discuss. I just don't see it as a women in horror film to discuss.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. Maybe other listeners will disagree with me, but I think, like, we're gonna have a really good chat about this film. I just, when I watched it twice, I was just like, even after the second time, I was like, there are other films that could have taken this spot, I think.
Okay.
For a women in horror month. But in general, like, I think this is going to be a really good film to discuss. So with that being said, let's get into the film. I'm
so excited. I'm thrilled to discuss this thing now.
You take these things so personally. You're letting your Leo ego take over. And it's like, it's not that deep.
I'm not even opening my mouth. I'm still getting it.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
So Kat's boyfriend is taking her to Paris for the weekend, and my boyfriend's taking me to a disused quarry. At your first opportunity, turn around. It's beautiful. Why don't we just find another spot?
I'm not gonna be bullied away by a bunch of 12-year-olds.
Hey guys, can you turn your sounds down,
please? On here, mate.
And what are you looking at? Are you looking at my tits? Fucking jog on.
Steve, where's the beach bag?
It's got the car keys in it. I just want my car back. Car keys, phone, wallet. You've had your fun.
First phone he sees, 999. Now we've got to finish this.
Run! Listen to me. Go get him. Go! I'm fucking bleeding to death.
I've got to get us out of here. Can you hold on?
Somebody!
wouldn't happen to have seen a bunch of kids tooling around on BMXs.
Little turds.
So this film was released in 2008. It was directed by James Watkins and stars Kelly Riley and Michael Fassbender. The IMDb plot is as follows. Refusing to let anything spoil their romantic weekend break, a young couple confronts a gang of loutish youths with terrifyingly brutal consequences. So, I
want to get into
I want to get into the characters of Jenny and Steve because they are our first introductions into this film. They are our main protagonists. These are the characters that we are supposed to root for. What did you think of them, Lucy?
I mean, from the offset, I thought they were quite nice. Just like a kind of there wasn't anything about them that really kind of caught my eye. I didn't know where this movie was going to go. I knew that it was going to get dark, so I was almost kind of waiting for it throughout this. Like, oh, what's going to happen? But initially, I did quite like Jenny and Steve. You know, for a straight couple, they're quite adorable together at the start.
I didn't like them. I thought they were Tories.
See, for me, I was like, one of my biggest issues with this film is I hate Steve. I hate him so much. He's such a prick, I think, throughout the whole film. And I'm like, I'm supposed to root for this person?
He's a total dick.
Well, he does become a dick later on. Oh, for sure. He is an arse.
I think he's a dick from the very get-go. Like, I think this boy's a wank.
Like, yeah, a proper hater. Whereas, like, Jenny, like, I thought... This is where the film gets a wee bit confused for me because obviously we're introduced to Jenny as a nursery teacher at first. Obviously, it's quite like a stereotypical role for a woman, but it's certainly like it's meant to paint a picture of her being like cute and kind and friendly and someone who believes in like the goodness of children. And I don't really feel like this idea of her being a teacher and the villains of the film being children is ever really visited, and I don't know, I don't think it's really brought together very well. What do you think?
I think the only time that we just when she, oh, what's the little kid's name that they see at the very beginning? Is it Adam?
Adam. Yeah.
You know, when they first see Adam and she tries to approach him, you sort of sense that there's maybe that they're trying to hint at that, but you're right, they never really revisit it again. It's just, and then that makes me think, well, why is she a nursery teacher? Because like you say, that's a very stereotypical role for a female character in not just a horror movie but just
in general, yeah.
You know, so I felt like they didn't necessarily need to go there. She could have done anything. She could have met Steve off a fucking construction site, or you know, like literally anything, you know. But they decided to make it a nursery teacher, which in the end didn't have any bearing on this story at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because I picked this doesn't mean I liked it, by the way.
So, Jenny comes out of the school, we introduced to Steve, he's in this great big fuck-off car. And like, we're in a clearly, like, very middle-class area, like city area, which is obviously very different from where the majority of the film takes place. So one thing I do kind of like, and it's very much like a cinema trope, but taking our main couple out of their like comfy, cozy city middle class area and then setting the film in the wilderness, and the wilderness is often used as a means of showing isolation, but it's also showed as a way of like othering people and othering the community that they go into. I think like the best example of this is probably like Twin Peaks, where Kyle McLaughlin's character goes to Twin Peaks and like everyone's very, very weird, and like we're meant to think they're all very strange and feel isolated and stuff. What did you guys think about that?
Well, I have a point to make actually, slightly, right? And it's slightly away from what you're saying, right? They travel like all fucking day to get to this place, like, right? She picks them up, he picks Jenny up after she's finished work. So we're suggesting, like, that's what, 4 or 5? It's the middle of the fucking night when they get to where they get to. So they've obviously been driving for a number of hours, right? And when we see the view that he's been talking about, it's a very nice view. But you can get that view literally anywhere in this country. Like, you know, it's not... It wasn't some once-in-a-lifetime sight that she just had to see. It was just a nice view by a lake somewhere in, you know, a country town in England. Like, they're everywhere.
Yeah. Like, it's so true. And I just feel like, as well, like, there's the scene where they're at the beach and the kids are all there, and then the dog takes his shit on the beach, and it's like, that beach looks like it's absolutely covered in shit. Like, it's not even a nice beach.
You're right, it's fucking awful. Like, I don't particularly like going to seaside towns and lakes and, like, this country. If I'm going to be on a beach, if I go somewhere for a trip and I've got a beach, I need it to be at least 40 degrees. I need there to be a bar within about 50 yards of where I'm sitting. You know, I'm not going to some shitty lake in the middle of nowhere where these fucking chavs are just going to come and kill me.
You want the full summer holiday fantasy with a cider in your hand as well, living your best life.
I do. I want a cider. I just want a cider, really.
So in the car journey, we're given, like, a ton of exposition via radio, which sets this film in a time, not just in a place, but in a very political place as well. And I think this is what annoyed me the most about this film, because it is complete demonization of the working class.
Yes. 100%.
It's not even questionable. It's just, it's so blatant.
Like, I've got some quotes from some people who are involved in the film who try to defend this aspect of it and honestly just dig themselves into an even bigger hole. So, a lot of, like, film critics and stuff will put this film in a group of films that came out between, like, 2006 and 2012, and they'll call it hoodie horror. And these films are really about broken Britain, said in air quotes, which is basically a term used by the Conservative Party between 2007 and 2010 to describe the perceived societal decay of the time. And they use this slogan to basically win the election in 2010. They claimed that Labour had failed on law and order and that they would change this, and the leader of the party at the time claimed he wanted to tackle the irresponsibility, the selfishness, and behaving as if your choices have no consequences, children without fathers, school without discipline, reward without effort, crime without punishment, and rights without responsibility.
I fucking hate Tories.
Fuck the Tories. I'm sorry, my head's in my hand.
If any of you listening, right, and I don't know, this might lose us listeners. If you're a Tory, you're,
get fucked. Like,
really right-leaning, go fuck yourself.
Honestly. Get to fuck.
And I'd like to say that we're kidding. We're not. We're really not. We are a very left... I mean, anyone who follows us on our socials knows that we're a very, very left-leaning... in terms of our sort of political standings, all three of us. So I don't think that comes as any surprise anyway. But yeah, fuck the Tories, honestly. That's all. That was the only point I was really making there.
There was a lot of moving... I mean, I'm trying to think what else was in that year. It was Kidulthood or Adulthood maybe in that era as well.
Would we count Attack the Block in there?
I was wondering that.
Well, I would say so, yes. I feel like it approaches the subject in a different way, but I would say yes, it does.
Yeah.
I feel like it approaches the subject in a much more sympathetic way. Because this film, like, you can see from various just, like, details and stuff, like, Brett's mom is in jail, you know, he lives in an abusive home, like, it's clearly, like, a very poor area, so there's all these little things that let you know that, like, this isn't a great area. It's something that's been left behind by government and council funding. But I think what a lot of people do when they watch this film is they're like, these kids are evil. And like, obviously, you know, what they do is very, very bad. Definitely not condoning that. But I think like Moses and the gang in Attack the Block are much, much, much more sympathetic. Like, you really get behind them, you root for them. Like, you feel a bit sorry for them in some ways as well, but you know that deep down, like, they're all good boys. Whereas here, it's like, it's much more questionable. So I would definitely put them together.
Yeah. I mean, in this film, there's obviously, you have that sort of go-between on a couple of the gang. There's one or two who, you know, try to stand up. We'll obviously talk about it when we get there, but there's a couple of them that try to stand up. A couple of them are sort of coerced and forced into doing what they end up doing. But there is that sort of very much like they're trying to just make you go, oh, chav kids, fuck them all.
It's completely demonizing them. I'm in complete agreement with you, Lindsay. I mean, I would put Attack the Block in that kind of broken Britain sphere, but with Attack the Block, it doesn't justify any violent behavior or anything, but you can kind of see the rationale, nature versus nurture. You know, deep down, these kids are actually good kids. They've just been, it's unfortunate circumstances. Whereas in Eden Lake, even though we do get a bit of that background on some of the characters, like Brett, there isn't any sympathy behind it. And the characters, you don't really get to know them. It's just very surface level. You don't really see their character arc or maybe their rationale behind their frame of thinking. Like, it is very demonizing them. It's very much an us versus them. It's an otherization, really.
Definitely, whereas with the kids in Attack the Block, like, you kind of, you see yourself more in them. They're a lot more relatable. Whereas in this film, it's just like, poor people are bad, poor people are evil. Whereas in Attack the Block, you maybe see a bit more of the reasons behind why these kids are doing the things they do. And it is essentially poverty, austerity, like, no money, no funding going into these places, a lack of resources. Whereas in this film, all those things are there in the background too, if you want to look for them. But the director of this film does not want you to see them.
Yeah.
No, very much brushes it under the carpet.
Yeah, 100%. Right. What's my next point?
I don't fucking know.
I don't know either.
That's the end of the episode.
Done.
So we're talking about like Attack the Block there being a contemporary of Eden Lake. Other films that could come under Hoodie Horror are things like Harry Brown, which I think does a much better job of talking about kind of loutish people in the community and how they could be a danger in society at times, but does it in a much better way than Eden Lake. Like, in Eden Lake, this group of kids are like 50 max, right?
I'd say so. I'd say they're ranging from like, what, 10 to 15?
Yeah. Like, I find it hard to call a 15-year-old evil. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. I hate kids anyway, so...
I am not a big fan of kids. Like, I don't really understand them. Like, there's no kids in my family. I don't know what to do if one approaches me. I just think they're a bit weird. But, like, I'm really evil.
He's same.
Yeah, basically. But, like, I don't think they're evil. Like, I want good things for them. I want to protect them. I want to nurture them. Like, kids are the future at the end of the day. Do you know what I mean? And I don't want people, close-minded people, going, you're from a poor background. You are a thug, and that's it. And I don't think that's right. And I feel like that's what this film is trying to do, and I don't agree with it in the slightest.
It very much echoes the rhetoric that was being portrayed in the media at the time. Like, you'll remember them talking about hoodies and supermarkets and shopping centres and super Osbos and all these sorts of things. Like, it does, that was the rhetoric from the media at the time around, you know, youths, working class class youths in these areas.
100%. I would say we still have that today, though. I think there's still very much a lot of classism, especially in Britain. You know, it's looked down upon if you live in a council house or council flat in certain areas. People will be like, oh, you've got to stay away. I can even think about it where we live. You know, there's certain parts of Aberdeen where people are like, no, you can't go there. You get that in every city, but...
It's called Lucy's house.
Bitch, you live across the road from me.
three streets away, thank you.
Three streets away. But yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I think that's still very prevalent in today's society.
I mean, well, think about it in terms of the free school meals and the reduction in child benefit. It's like this whole thing, if you can't afford children, don't have them.
there's a fucking global pandemic happening.
What if one of the parents dies? What if one of them gets horribly injured and becomes disabled? And
what if
anymore?
COVID takes over the world?
What if we're in a global pandemic? Exactly. So yeah. There's all these things where I feel like more right-wing conservative-leaning people are like, oh, you should be able to look after yourself. And it's not about wanting handouts. It's about treating everybody fairly.
It's not like, as well... No one, I can almost guarantee you that no one who has to take a child benefit or has to go to a food bank or any of these things, no one wants that.
No.
They don't want it for themselves. But, you know, so it's not like it's okay, you know, these people who are like, oh, well, all these benefit scroungers who are making all this money, blah, blah, blah. That's like one in a million people. Like,
exactly.
It's just ridiculous. It's so fucking ridiculous.
I was going to say, at the end of the day, that could happen to any of us, you know? Of us could end up in poverty because job stability, home stability, it's, you know, things can happen. Well, we've seen that with the pandemic, a bunch of people not being furloughed and their jobs being taken away. It can happen to anyone.
I can't remember who said it. Someone said something along the lines of, you know, you're just one or two bad decisions away from poverty, and that's it. That's really it.
And it's that way as well, like, in this community we see, like, we don't necessarily know or see anybody being, like, out of work, but they're all obviously in low-paid work. And it's just like, but just because you're in a low-paid job, and I think hopefully the pandemic has shown us this, just because you're in a low-paid job, like, doesn't mean you are working, like, less hard than other people. And just because you're in a low-paid job as well, doesn't mean that you should be struggling to pay your bills. Like, if you work for a minimum wage, you should still be able to cover your rent.
I mean, that is
pay
the
for
point
food
of...
and. Exactly.
That's meant to be the point of minimum wage, is that, do you remember, like, minimum wage was meant to, full-time person on minimum wage was meant to be enough for a husband, a wife, and two kids or one kid to live? Two kids.
Really?
Yeah, that's why the minimum wage was brought in. That was the benchmark for minimum wage, so that they could pay their bills, put food on the table and clothes on their kids' back, and that was the benchmark. And now it's not even enough for one person, let alone four people.
Exactly. There's so many people, like, around the world, like, we're talking about this very, like, UK-centric, around the world, battling their pan in 40 hours a week for minimum wage, and they still have to get, go to food bank to feed themselves or feed their families. It's ridiculous. And I feel like this film, like, almost kind of perpetuates that, like, makes you want to hate these people. Fuck this movie for that.
I mean, it succeeds because you hate these fucking kids.
Well, yeah, like a lot of people online who were commenting on this, you know, they really love this film, they really hate the kids. And I was having a fucking Friday the 13th part 2 moment again, and people like, did we watch the same film? I'm angry! Like...
Just films are epic, it's fine.
Exactly. So, I made reference to, just to kind of like tidy up this little ranty part of the review. So I made reference to what the director said about the film. And he said in an interview with The Guardian, which of course he fucking did. this film isn't an attack on a particular social group, but if you had a bunch of public school kids in blazers, it just wouldn't be that scary. There's an element of, these are feral kids let off the leash. The films that stay with you exploit the fears closest to you. It's a very primal fear. The fear of the dark, or a fear of violence, fear of children. These are very real fears that go very deep in our society today.
Lucy, do you want to take this or will I?
Just, I have no words. Just go back into your fucking middle class house with your Waitrose shopping bags and your bloody Audi, you just wanker.
I mean, he says, oh, this isn't an attack on a certain group of people, but if it was my group of people, it wouldn't be that scary. So we've made it this group of people. Like, fuck off, honestly. Yeah. Oh.
Is that from Boris? That sounds like a direct quote from Boris Johnson, honestly.
Jacob Rees-Mogg. That sounds like a Jacob Rees-Mogg thing to say.
Very much so. With, so even with that, like we kind of spoke about Attack the Block there before. You see the differences even in that immediately, because the writer and director of Attack the Block was from the community, so he handled it so much better than this person who's like, people are scary.
Not only was he from the community, but he did a load of like market research as well in and around the community, getting people's opinions, what they thought of what he was doing, you know, and all of that sorts of things. And we had a really good discussion in that episode about that as well, you know, and the differences that that can actually make. So, night and day, shall we say, compared to what this director did. The fuck? Let's let's get this guy on under false pretenses and just be like, yeah, we'd love to talk to you on our show. And then just annihilate him.
I mean, that's a clear example. I feel like I was basically saying they're fuck the middle class. I'm not saying fuck the middle class necessarily, but like,
you see, if you're going to do... classist, you.
But it's the same with every movie we talk about. If you're gonna speak about stories that aren't your own, have those people in the writing room, have those people behind the camera, have their stories represented, because you can clearly see that the people that made this movie, or at least the director anyway, don't have a clue about what it's like to live in poverty. They've never actually met or had a sit-down discussion with somebody that is working class.
I'm working class. I grew up poor.
Me too.
So, all working class children end up having a horror podcast. That's the 2021 way.
So, have we got any more Tony bashing to be had?
Oh, I'm sure. We could go all day, to be honest.
Could do a special.
We could do a 24-hour special, you know. But I think we've made our point.
So let's get into some of the action of this film. So we kind of spoke a bit about like that othering, that otherness, the very clear differences between Jenny and Steve and this community that they come into for their wee holiday. Like, at what point for you guys were you like, the first time you watched this, like, oh, there's something not right here, there's something... Like, when did you feel that turn coming?
As soon as the mother slapped the shit out of her child. Like...
Yeah.
I feel like that's, like, it's quite a good scene as well, because he's clearly going to say that slap, child, like, needs a slap.
Absolutely.
But obviously being, like, oh, like, so above it. That's actually another thing that really winds me up. People who don't have kids telling other people how to raise kids, shut your mouth, you don't know what it's like until you pop out your own.
But don't hit them.
No, that's true. None of us have kids, but
that is
who are we to
that
judge?
Is now illegal exactly. In Scotland, so it's illegal to hit your kids now. It wasn't illegal in 2008, and I'm not sure if it is illegal in England just now, but I know it's illegal in Scotland to slap
illegal
your kids.
In Scotland.
But yeah, you're right. That's exactly what he was going to say. And, you know, she took the slap right out of his mouth. And what a slap it was.
Like... But it's even, like, before that, like, it kind of wound me up. Because Jenny's like, eh, they should be in their bed. And it's like, fuck off. Like, they're playing.
I mean, also as well, I'm assuming, right, it's a Friday night. It's not even a school night because she's not going to work the next day. So they can stay up as long as they fucking want.
Exactly. Enjoying themselves, and she's like, oh, they should really be in their bed. Oh. Shock, Jenny.
Fuck's sake. Can we just change her name to Karen and be done with it?
She is a cat. She is a bit of a Karen.
But yeah, anyways, you know, as soon as that happens, then you know that, well, obviously you don't know, like, further on what's actually going to happen, but you kind of get this idea that there's very much this sort of othering that we've been talking about, you know, the this is them and this is us is so, like, just plain to see from this very moment. And, you know, even in some of the normal interactions that we get, you know, like when they're in the cafe the next day and, you know, they're having that discussion with the woman who's taking their order, and there's a bit of that going on about it there as well.
Sorry though, but he's like, oh, their parents might want to know. It's like, fucking shut it, you grass. Like,
you grass.
He's a grass.
He is.
But then as well, like, there's that bit where he just breaks into someone's house. By the way,
like, the audacity of this fucking guy, like, the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, I'm supposed to like this cunt, like, really?
Just walks into someone's home. But even then, the home is so stereotypical of what a working class person, like, it's covered with booze, it's filthy, there's holes in the doors where, you know, and we're led to believe that they're, like, punch holes or whatever.
That's it as well. Like, he walks around his home, he sees all this, and, like, maybe you can make assumptions, like, especially with, like, the fist through the door, and he's still like, these kids are terrible, I need to get them back for messing with my car, and maybe...
No go, oh, this is clearly an abusive household.
Yeah, actually, maybe this kid's got a lot going on, and that's why he's doing it, and blah, 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 and do you know what I mean?
Because up to this point...
How can somebody lack so much empathy that they're still insistent on chasing this child down for what is essentially a prank? Obviously, shouldn't have done it, but it's just a prank.
Up until this point, they've not really done anything that is unforgivable. You know, they've been offensive to Jenny, and they've been objectifying her, and they've been harassing, and they haven't stole the car at this point, right? This is before that.
No.
You know, so... Well, obviously, because that's how they get to the house. And then, like I say, this guy just has the fucking audacity to just walk into this house. And, yeah, like, fuck this guy. Honestly, you should have died quicker.
And then it's like, before that on the beach, when they're like, can you turn the music down? You don't know on the beach. Like, what? This is where they live. And for all you know, they could come here every Saturday with the dog, play their music, throw stones in the water, do whatever they want.
Surely. And like... That, like, is that's it as well, because when they're doing that, yeah, okay, they're being dicks, you know, they're no picking up after their dog, and they're being dicks, but they're not doing anything really, like, surely that is preferable to what comes later in this film.
Exactly. Like, Jenny... not condoning what the kids do in the end, but it's just like... I feel like this is escalated by the adults in the situation to a certain extent.
And Jenny does try to sort of say to Steve on several occasions, no, just leave it, let's go, let's leave. So she at least has that, even though she's partially responsible for this sort of escalation. But let's face it, it's Steve. Steve's he's the one who first approaches them. You know, she doesn't tell him that he should go over and do that. You know, and then he's the one who goes into the house. He's the one that chases them. He physically chases them in his car at one point as well.
Yeah, oh my God. Like, before they go to the cafe, it's like, what is wrong with you? You are a grown-ass man in a big-ass car. You're here to propose to your girlfriend, and you are chasing children with your vehicle.
He's such a child.
You need to reevaluate your life.
He's such a child. Even before that, you know, when... there's a couple of things he says while they're on the beach. First of all, he says that it's just boys being boys, and that line gave me the big bulk.
Oh, yeah.
But
how many lads have you sexually harassed, Steve?
We'll get onto that, I'm sure. she says, oh, well, maybe we should just find another piece of the beach. And he's like, oh, I'm not going to be bullied away by a bunch of 12-year-olds. We were here first. And it's like, grow the fuck up.
It's so fucking masculinity. Of all the places they could go, this forest is obviously fucking humongous. There's other places they could go. Like, if you're really that arse, Jenny even says, let's move. But no, he's been a stubborn wee prick, and he's like, no, I'm better than these kids.
By the way, just to take it away a little bit, who the fuck goes scuba diving in monkey-ass lakes?
He's like, yeah. It's amazing what you find at the bottom of the lake brings up literal trash.
He's got like the full like, what the fuck is this boy doing? I bet it's about half a feet deep.
I know. I could probably just...
You'd probably just fucking snorkel his way down there. But no, he's got this big fucking scuba gear on. Fucking kid standing right next to him with a bandy net or something, Ken. What a dick. This guy's the biggest dick.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do, that's going to be our new award at the end of the year for the shows. Biggest Dick of the Year award in movies that we've covered. I think that's no bad, actually.
That's a good idea.
Fucking write that down.
Better write that down.
So we've just kind of discussed like some of the general nonsense that happens before the kind of turning point that leads to all this going a bit more deadly. So the kids steal the car, Jenny and Steve go looking for it, and they find all the kids in the forest. There's some knives involved, there's a bit of a scuffle, and poor Bonnie the dog gets it.
Stop killing dogs in horror movies, please.
I know.
And cats. Any animals. What did these animals ever do to you?
I know. I mean, at least with this one, like it was very much like an accident. I do feel like sometimes, like animals are killed for the shock value, like almost murder or something. This is very much an accident. Poop on the dog, got in the way in the scuffle, and took a knife to the jugular.
Like, it was like, oh, I'll drive it to the vet. It's fucking deed, Steve, alright? Trying to be, like, fake nice. Like, you've killed their dog. Just leave.
Well, Brett obviously gets, like, really upset here. And, like, I can't help but think, if someone stabbed my poor pugsy bear and he died, I'd be stalking you.
You'd definitely go on a murder spree.
Or people, if I catch someone looking at my dog the wrong way, I want to absolutely murder them. Like, don't you dare look at my wee boy like that.
Listen, nobody's killing my cat. She's too nuts.
Ripley will kill you.
Yeah.
Ripley is Brett.
If anybody dare touch a hair on my cat's chaos, it'll be a Carrie situation. Fire away.
I mean, I'd be the same with Blossom. She's actually, I mean, she'd be a wee cow sometimes, but she's such a sweet wee girl. Like, she's never attacked anybody in her life, and it's just like, if anybody ever hurt that wee girl,
I wish I could say that about my cat. My cat spends her entire day just attacking shit, so fucking feral.
Bless her.
Feral. I'm sure Blossom will make her appearance on the podcast soon.
She's sitting on her wee stool back there on her fluffy blanket, so I'm sure she'll come.
I thought you were going to say on her phone. Fuck's sake. Right. So before we move on, because I feel like we're at that point, and this is the point where my tenuous link, apparently, to this being a movie that we could talk about in terms of women in horror and things like that. And you are right, it's not as you know, obviously out there, this isn't a film that's promoting like a very, very strong female character, you know, it's not got a female writer or anything like that. But what I wanted to talk about was, there's a point in this movie where, you know, when they're on the beach, and it's Brett, isn't it, that he's sort of like objectifying Jenny, I forgot her name there. She's sort of objectifying, he's looking at her through binoculars. I think he pulls his dick out at one point.
Or he pretends to,
or something like that. And obviously, this actually is quite apt, and obviously I didn't know this at the time, but for what's been going on in this country in the past sort of week or two. Now, I know that we're going to get a bit deep here, because this is serious, serious shit. You know, obviously, with the death of Sarah Everard. And, you know, there's been so many people who's been coming out with their stories of how they've been made to feel uncomfortable or sexually abused or harassed and things like that. And, you know, obviously I'm not going to ask you to divulge all of your experiences. That might be a bit too deep for you guys for a podcast episode. But this does show that women are objectified at every turn of their life. This is literally the only other people that is on the beach with them, and they're objectifying her and making her feel uncomfortable. And I think that does show that that's real for almost every single woman in this country.
I don't think I know anyone, any female, that hasn't had some form of sexual harassment or violence threatened upon them or actually happened. I think you could pretty much guarantee that every single woman in this country has faced something similar to what Jenny was objected to on that beach. Lindsay, I don't know if you agree with me, but...
Yeah, no, I was about to say the exact same thing, like, from just being catcalled to full-on rape, like, I don't know a single, like, female that it hasn't happened to, genuinely, which is horrifying, because it shouldn't happen to anybody, ever. And it's, like, even in situations like Jenny's with her boyfriend, who is like a big, tall, like built guy.
He's ripped. And
it still happens to her. Like, it's happened to me before. I was holding hands with my boyfriend walking down the street, and someone was like, "Suck my cock." And
No.
My boyfriend found it funny, and I turned to him. I was like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" Which is obviously easier to say to him because I lived with him, and you know, it was much more. It was easier to have that conversation with him, but then he was like, "Oh God, what have I done?" Like, he thought it was funny because that's the kind of shit he used to do with his friends. Whereas, you know, it's not funny. And that guy, like Brett would have been like, "Haha, this is so funny." But it's like, you wouldn't have done that if it was two guys. Maybe two gay guys, but like definitely not two straight guys. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
On you go.
I was just going to show it just goes to show that this type of behavior can happen anywhere, you know, like this whole thing on Twitter as well, this fucking curfew thing is absolutely bullshit. This curfew for men after a certain time, because that's not going to change anything. Because
I think like people have taken that and ran with it. I don't know the name of the politician who proposed it, but I don't think she was seriously proposing it. Yes. I think she was using it as an example to say, well, there are certain times of the day where women cannot feel safe and leave the house. Obviously, you can leave the house, but how safe are you going to feel walking down a dark street in the middle of the night? You're not even the middle of the night. You know, if it's winter time, it gets dark here. What, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon? That's half the day. It doesn't get bright until 10, 11 in the morning. So, you know, you potentially face going to and from work, you know, in the dark.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I think people took that. The hashtag not all men people took that and just sort of ran with it. And yeah, Lindsay, it gives me the book as well. I'm a white 6'1", 30, oh, I almost aged myself there. 29-year-old man. And you know what, like, I can imagine if I'm walking down the street, even if I'm just going to, you know, Lidl's to get my shop, if I've got my mask on and my hat on and my hood up because it's raining and I'm hunched over and I'm just walking down fast with my head down, I can imagine that would be quite intimidating. Now, yous obviously know that I'm just a fucking big softie anyway, like, but Joe or Jill Blogs across the street, she's not going to know that.
No,
exactly. And it can happen, like, what I was going to say is it can happen at any time of day, no matter where you are. I mean, I've been subject to that on a morning bus to uni at 9 a.m, in, you know, with loads of people on the bus. Like, it just goes to show, like, this happens at the daytime in the woods with her boyfriend. Like, it doesn't matter where you are, who you're with. It can happen anywhere.
Yeah. So anyways, that was the point I was bringing up. Tenuous link over, we can go back to the No, but I obviously, especially with everything that's been going on, like I say, in this country in the last, what is it, week and a half, I felt like I sort of had to talk about that a little bit, because it does happen in this movie, and it is a link to the real life, even though that like might not have been intended by the director, because let's face it, the director's judgment is very questionable anyway, so I very much doubt he's making some sort of social commentary on this. But you know, it's just one of those inadvertent things that have ended up happening.
I think as well, like, because I almost kind of like glossed over it, but I think that goes to show that like women kind of have their lines, and they'll be like, oh that's fine, because it, you know, they didn't grab me, or they, you know,
justifications, isn't there?
But it's so fucking relentless all the bloody time that you do make these lines in your head, and it's like, actually sometimes you just have to say no, none of it's actually okay, and really put your foot down. And I think maybe for me watching it, it's like, fans in that situation, it's just like, oh, they just looked.
Listen,
they're just layered, it's fine, they didn't touch me.
Listen, I worked pre-pandemic in a nightclub, in one of our prominent city nightclubs. And if I sat there, right, and stopped and flagged up every single time I saw someone being harassed, abused, I would never get any work done.
Mm.
Like, I'm being like genuinely serious here, because it is constant, and especially in the nighttime culture.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyways. Merry Christmas. Happy Thursday, okay. But no, I felt that it was important to sort of make a comment on that, but we can move on if you would like.
Yes, let's do that. So Bonnie's dog's been killed. I'm trying to think what happens next.
So, after this, obviously, you know, shit hits the fan, doesn't it? And
yeah, this is like the turning point, and Rhett goes fucking Akka.
They try and escape in the car, and they crash. Yes. That's what happens next.
Yes. And Steve's stuck in the car, isn't he?
Yeah, good. Fucking good. What, you know what I hate? Because he obviously tells her, oh, make a run for it, go get help. And she does the exact opposite and falls asleep in the forest and goes back for him the next day without help.
I know. I feel like, yeah, that's a good point. Like, I feel like if something like that happened, your adrenaline would be so, like, up there. You'd probably run through the night, do you know what I mean? Until you found a house or something to get help.
And we know that the houses actually aren't that far away, because at the very end, I mean, it only takes her a few minutes to drive to the nearest house.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know, okay, obviously they get a bit lost in the woodland, but it feels like it's a really small area that they're getting lost in as well, because we keep hitting, like, the same points, you know, that we keep seeing. Definitely. That sign for the nature trail, and
yeah,
we see, you know, when she shows the map, like, that she's really not that far away, and... yeah, it feels a bit odd.
So when Jenny wakes from her slumber, Steve is tied up.
Fucking Sleeping Beauty.
So Steve's tied up with all the barbed wire, and like, he's all bloody, and Brett gets all the kids to stab him. Like, what did we think in this scene? Like, Brett's clearly the ringleader. I feel like the other kids are clearly not into it either.
I mean, none of the kids, even, well, with the possible exception of Paige, who's, like, filming it, but I'm probably sure there's other coercion there as well, probably of the kind that we've already been talking about just previously from Brett, although I might be making a stretch, I might be making an assumption there, but... Before we talk about that, the fucking kid that stabs him in the mouth.
Oh, I know!
There's no many things that get me, like eyes and feet. Like, if you start playing about with them in horror films, that really, like, that fucking kid takes a bloody Stanley blade and wiggles it about as well. It's not just like a quick in and out. He's, like, wiggling it about his mouth.
It's pure savage.
It's disgusting. It's minging.
But I'm not going to lie though, I was expecting Steve not to be able to talk after that.
Yeah, he's just like, ah, fuck you.
It's like, he's completely fine. So I was quite shocked. But what I will say, like, in this part, like, some of the effects are really good. Like, with Steve, like, oozing out the blood, like, it looks like Michael Fassbender should be fucking stabbed for real. Do you know what I mean?
Oh dear, I'd say poor Steve, but nah.
Not at all. So Jenny tries to create a distraction.
She tries to phone 999 from Steve's phone.
I'm clearly not clued up in my 2000s technology. What the fuck is she using?
Was it like a, like...
It was Bluetooth, wasn't it?
Was it like a little, what were they used to be called? Like, they're little tablet sort of things. Because it surely wasn't a phone. Otherwise, why didn't she just fucking call 999 herself?
Yeah, because you're right, Lucy. She, like, Bluetooths to the phone and dials 999. Where's her phone?
I know, because it's never explained that she's lost her phone as well.
No.
It's all very confusing.
It's 2008. It's not the 80s, you know? You'd think she'd have a phone on her.
We Motorola Razr? Like...
Well, we all had a Motorola Razr, right?
Yeah.
That and a 3210. Those were, like, the two phones of the age. Definitely. Oh, do you remember those, like, orange Sony Ericssons you used to get?
Oh my god, yeah. I always wanted one of those because they were like the phone for music.
Yes. I didn't even listen to music. I still wanted them.
You'd probably get like 10 songs on it if you're lucky.
I remember my first MP3 player. It was like 256 megabytes, held about 18 songs.
And you would have thought like, this is the fucking creme de la creme of technology.
Absolutely.
Right,
I was pure buzzing. I couldn't wait to like show off at school the next day. You know, just like in my blazer, just be like, little MP3 player there.
Do you really like the iPod the minis that you could like clip? I had like a clip and you could clip it on.
Oh, is it the nanos or the minis?
Yes,
or
the nanos.
Yes.
Oh, nanos.
If there's any of our listeners who are under the age of 18, you can turn off the podcast for the next 5 minutes. We're going to be on a nostalgia binge.
They're like, what are these prehistoric pieces of technology these bitches are talking about?
I remember, what was I doing? I can't remember. I think it was something to do with college. And because I've gone back to college, obviously most of the people in my class are like a lot younger than me. So one of the lecturers was talking about going home in her day and using MSN Messenger. And I was like, bitch, that was like my everyday after school activity was to go home and just nudge all my pals on MSN Messenger. You just log out and log back in so that people could see that you were on. No, like, remember all the tactics. There were so many tactics. Mm-hmm. There was that in Bebo as well. You used to give out like your three loves a day on Bebo.
Oh yes.
Those were the fucking days, honestly.
They were. You want to hear my peak emo cringe? Is, you know how you had the little description underneath your username on MSN? I would put like Papa Roach lyrics on it, like tear my heart open. Yeah. No, same. Judge, please judge.
No, I did the same. Winter was like My Chemical Romance lyrics.
May shame.
Fucking Evanescence. Oh dear. Fucking nostalgia binge, honestly. Who'd have thought that Eden Lake would have brought up a wee nostalgia trip?
2008, we were all still in high school.
Well, we weren't even 18 yet. Lucy was just a baby at that point. What were you in 2008? Like 13? 14?
I'm 26 right now. Oh god, math.
13. Oh yeah, you'd have been 13.
Just a teen.
No, that can't be right.
No, wait.
Because in 2008, I was 17. I don't know, I guess it depends on when it would fall, I guess. Anyways, back to the podcast.
The podcast. So I feel like during this time, like, between Jenny discovering Steve being tied up and then Steve eventually dying of his injuries just as they're about to be set on fire, I feel like I do root for Jenny a lot during this scene. I feel like she shows a lot of like innovation. I feel like very much based on who we see at the start, like we should be seeing someone completely crumble, but she actually shows like loads of ingenuity and smarts as a way to keep herself alive and try and keep Steve alive, although I think her efforts are kind of futile given his wounds. What do you think at this point of Jenny?
I think you're right. I think in those sort of few, you know, even just those first few scenes and a good portion of the movie, yes. You know, she saw this sort of shrinking wallflower, isn't she? You know, where Steve's like obviously the guy who's in control of, I don't want to say in control of their relationship, but he's obviously the sort of like the decision maker, isn't he? He very much seems like that, and she seems quite happy to just, you know, go along with whatever Steve's doing. And then obviously she's sort of plunged into this situation where it's like, well, Steve's not in charge anymore, and now she has to, you know, almost take the reins. And you're right, she does show, you know, ingenuity at times. She makes some dumb decisions, you know, like falling asleep instead of getting help, and you know, things like, and like going back and trying to Bluetooth 999. I still don't really understand what she achieved there. But yeah, there's times when she does things, you know, we're obviously much later, even after Steve's death especially, you know, when she's like almost tries to turn her into this like badass bitch when she like comes out of the shit filled bin all covered in mud and it's just a bit minging and that. So there definitely is a shift, a big shift in her, yeah, her character as this film goes on.
Lucy, what do you think?
I'm in agreement. As much as I was kind of shitting on Jenny a little bit at the start, she definitely comes into her own from this point onwards. You know, they it could have definitely gone a different route. As you said, Ian, she does make a couple dumb decisions, but overall she's quick. She's, you know, she's practically carrying Steve along whilst also trying to survive herself. And they go into like that little cabin and she's trying to stop the bleeding, and then she quickly, you know, they hide underneath in the lake, but I thought that was quite smart. You can see that she's really focused and she's got a goal, and that is to get out and try and save Steve at the same time. So yeah, I think it's a nice little character turning point for her.
I think the ultimate problem is, as well, like, you're right, she has this goal, she's very focused, you know, save Steve and get out, and in the end she achieves neither.
I know, but yeah. Like, We'll save the end for the
All
end.
Right, okay.
So she finds Adam, and she thinks Adam's going to help her, but Adam,
oh, that's
actually,
shit.
I don't.
I know, but what a dick.
I know, like, what he does is very wrong, and I feel, in some ways I feel heart sorry for him, but in other ways it's just like, surely, like, what he thinks he's going to do is lead these two people to their death. Like, surely that's not the way to get in with these people, but, or these kids rather. But
it takes her a really long time to cotton on as well. Like, he leads her to this clearing. It's very clear that, like, that's not a clearing by a road or anything. He's saying, like, his mum picks him up there. Bullshit. Like,
I know, like, she seems to have, like, before this been like super smart and on it and like trying to do all these things, and then as soon as she sees someone who she thinks can help her, she's just like, her brain just like,
yeah,
falls out her
because
ear.
As well, like, she's sitting there claiming, or like, she's shocked that the kid has a signal. People have been on their fucking phones this entire film.
Exactly.
As well, so yeah, like, these are some of the dumb things that she does.
So Jenny manages to get away. The fire burns through her ropes, and she's able to get away, and Brett's threatening her to come back or he's going to kill Adam. This is one thing I was like, can we blame Jenny for Adam's death?
No.
Or No,
I wouldn't say so.
Because what other reason? Because Steve's already dead at this point as well. So her coming back is only going to result in her own death. And probably Adam's death as well. Like, there's her coming back doesn't guarantee that neither her nor Adam live. So I don't think we can blame Adam's death on her. Poor Adam, it was a grim fucking death.
Those screams
as well, yeah, like just like echoing throughout the forest is, yeah, that's probably one of the hardest parts of this movie, I think, is because you see it as well, you see him in the background, the kid with the kids just burning in the background.
Yeah.
So it's pretty hard viewing.
Definitely. Sorry. So I kind of feel like
tear in your eye there, frog in your throat. Eh?
Always. So I kind of feel like at this point onwards, like Brett has kind of, his gang are maybe turning on him a little bit. They're definitely feeling like this is going too far. Like, I need to get out. We get this infamous moment of Jenny in that rancid fucking bin. Nope. She's trying to find you know, when they're at the poster for the map, and she's trying to find her way out.
Has she fucked her foot at this point?
Yes. I think this happens before she meets Adam.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. Right. So we're a wee bit past that. That's a pretty sore bit.
That is savage. That was, I actually kind of winced when I saw that. I had to go back and like,
because you can see it coming as well, can't you? Because you see is it a railway spike or something like that that's on the...
I couldn't figure out what it was.
I thought initially it might have been like a bear trap or something, or a piece of a bear trap or something like that. But, I mean, there's no many bears in...
I was going to say there's no bears in the UK.
There's no many bears in the British woodland, so maybe no. But a badger trap, maybe?
Maybe, but especially like pulls it through her foot. I was like, what are you doing? I could just feel that in my foot. I was like, what are you doing with it?
It reminded me of that bit in Revenge. Have you seen Revenge? You know, where he's scooping the glass from a torch out of his foot. It reminded me of that. It's pretty grim, to be honest.
It reminded me of the wet bandits in Home Alone in the first one. It's like the horror version when he's on the little nail thing, his foot on the stairs.
I like how I went to fucking rape revenge movie and Lucy went to Home Alone. Fuck's sake. But yeah, like, that's another moment that sort of does make you root for her a little bit, because you think she's fucking kind of going through that. She's gone through the mill at this point. You know? She's watched her lads burn to death. She's potentially, although we're saying she's not, but she's potentially at the blame for Adam dying, or partly the blame for Adam dying. And now she's got to pull this fucking spike clean through her foot. But she seems to recover pretty quickly and pretty well. Like, she's not hobbling too much for too long.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know again if that would be like the adrenaline of the situation, but yeah, that is actually something I didn't pick up on, and maybe she should have been hobbling a bit more.
Obviously.
So when Brett and Harry leave, Cooper kind of comes along. He seems to be like the youngest of the group. He's very much like, seems very regretful. I think he sees her, and I certainly got the impression anyway that he wants to help her, but Jenny's got other ideas.
Does she? Yeah, like, Jesus Christ.
And she fucking stabs him clean right in the neck. Like, what did you think?
I thought, oh, you bastard.
And
like, Jesus Christ. Because, I mean, I don't know, because I can see her thought, like, if that was her, if I was that character, I'd be like, fuck this, like, turn around and this, if I can get one of these
exactly,
kids.
Exactly, like, would you really have any trust?
No, none at all. Not after the whole Adam incident, you know. Maybe if the Adam incident hadn't happened, then possibly, but even then I still think that's a stretch. They've killed your boyfriend, you know, and, you know, not accidentally killed him as well. They've tied him up, they've tortured him, and they've burned him alive. Or not alive, he died just at the time, but, and tried to burn you alive. So I feel like she's probably pretty justified in her actions.
Definitely. What do you think, Lucy?
I'm in agreement, because when I first saw that, I was trying to think what I would do in that situation. And I'm trying to think of it from Jenny's perspective. Not only have they killed her boyfriend in a very full on torture, not just a quick death, they've also killed another kid. So you have to think in that moment, you know they're going to come and kill you. They've got the capability to. So it's kind of like a kill or be killed situation. What I did like about this scene is that after she does that, you can see in her eyes, she immediately regrets it. And she's almost trying to help stop the bleeding. And she's like, oh, fuck, what have I done? So it shows that juxtaposition where she's trying to fight for her life. But at the same time, these are also kids.
Fucking difference, you know? Between me and her. No regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets. Yeah. I tell you one thing I would have done differently is I'd have accepted my fate. I would not be going in that fucking bin. I'd have just accepted my death. I couldn't. And there's no way I could be quiet. I'd be throwing up. I'd be spewing all my. This,
I mean, part of me is like, you just go in, you just huffed it, and I think I'd be the same. I'd just be like dry bulking.
My gag reflex is pretty poor, so I'd be gagging all over the place. Wink, wink.
I wasn't gonna say it, but there you go.
Anyways. This has been a revealing couple of weeks for me on this podcast. Someone, you know what? It just reminded me, someone, I think it was Boomer, wants me to clip your laugh, Lindsay, and have it as a sound alert on my Twitch channel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
So I'm just going to take a note of that time there in this episode so I know exactly where to cut. Oh dear. Anyways, yeah, so she gets all shitty in the bed. What is it? What is that in the bed? What is it? Is it just shit? Is it poo?
I think it's dog shit, isn't
it? Poo?
Is it a dog shit bin? That's
I don't know.
I do like that when Brett like opens it a peek and he's like, oh Jesus Christ.
I know. So after this, like, they all discover Cooper's dead body, poor Cooper, and like a lot of them after that, they're just like, I want out, like, what the fuck is going on here? And Brett just totally beats the shit out of Harry. Does he beat him to death? Like, I wasn't entirely sure.
I wasn't sure either, but I think that's possibly where we're being led. Because he pummels his fucking head, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. And it's that, like, POV shot, and like, I hate that, like, they do it sometimes in films when it's like, you're the one that's lying there, like, getting beat up, and it's like, oh, like, I'm always like...
it's very anxiety-inducing.
Yeah, very much so. And Paige, like, is clearly terrified, and she just likes it out of there as well. So
I just want to say, like, how do we feel about Paige in this film? Because it's someone we've not really spoken about too much, and obviously we'll probably do it when we get to her end scene. But how do we feel about her? Like, how culpable is she in this?
I mean, like, I feel like it's hard because she gets like very little dialogue. So we have to. Two things.
We'll take Lucy. How do you feel about Paige?
Well, it's a difficult one but like Lindsay was about to say, because she has no dialogue. Yeah. It's really hard to make a judgment on her. On one hand, I feel for her because, you know, she's trying to find protection, and this gang is providing her that protection, and like, she feels like if she speaks out, especially at that point, it's kind of like, if you speak out against Brett, you're gonna die. But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, she does run away. I think at that point, she's kind of like, fuck, this has gone too far. But
I don't know. We're never told. I just sort of went with the impression that she was Brett's girlfriend. No, just me.
I don't know.
I don't know. Lindsay, what was you about to say?
Yeah, like, she's very non-verbal, so we kind of have to take a lot of her cues from, like, facial expressions and body language, and I do kind of get that feeling, like, she's often, like, hunched over, like, kind of almost cowering. Like, I feel like she's just, like, putting up with it. I don't know if it's kind of, she's scared of these boys, so she'll just, or Brett specifically, so she'll just do as they say, or she's just dealing with it because there's nothing better to do in the town than run around with these boys. So I do kind of get the feeling of her being, like, very put upon. You know, she's always, like, told what to do. It's not like she's, like, enthusiastically filming these, like, beatings or tortures or whatever. Like, she's very much being told and, like, kind of dragged along until I think it's when her friend is getting beat up, Harry, that she's just like, I'm done, and runs away.
Took her fucking long enough.
I know. But then it's that way with, like, fear, you know, that whole, like, yeah, fight or flight. Like, she, people always say fight or flight, but there's also freeze, and I think she's been frozen for a while with this group of boys,
yeah,
and not really known how to get out.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to get your opinions on that because, you know, like you say, she's a bit, she only has a few lines really in this, yeah, film, and but she's one of our central characters, really. You know,
this is true. I mean,
plays,
like,
a crucial role.
The gang is, like, quite big, but I mean, you only really get a lot of dialogue out of Brett and Cooper, who, I mean, now are, like, quite famous British actors, but back then, like, were just known for This Is England. So I guess maybe the most well-known still of everyone.
Yeah, I would say so.
So yeah, they're the only two boys that we get any links with, and yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So while this is happening, Jenny thinks that she's been saved by this person in a van. Becomes apparent, well, I was going to say, it becomes apparent that this is not the case. This guy is just going to pick up his brother, and I think this is the one near the start where Brett was like, oh, like, he sends him away for some reason. I can't even remember why. There's one in, like, a light jacket.
Yeah, it's after Steve... Is it not after Steve escapes the first time and he sends him to go and, like, chase after him or something?
Yeah.
While they chase after Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. So, like, this guy is just a way to pick up this boy. So this guy has no idea what has happened. He's not been around for any of it. And Jenny was like, nah, fuck this, I'm stealing the van. And she fucking pushes that accelerator down and hits Paige with a fucking...
Oh, ring. She wipes her the fuck out.
I know, like, Jenny is, you know, taking no prisoners, no fucks given, like, she wants away from this place and away from these children, she hates them. This is another one where I was like, I don't know if Jenny was being a bit harsh here by, like, running her over like this. Like, I know, like, she was hardly going to stop and let her, like, I'm giving a lift.
Come on,
then, bitch.
But I was like, she done it, and I was like, all right. Like,
I think there's a point where it stops being about self-defense, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Cooper thing, you could say, you know, he creeped up on her, and, you know, she was very suspicious, yeah, of it, you know, and, you know, she was still in a very vulnerable state. Whereas she was in the car, she's the difference here is she has the power in this one. You, mm, know, she has, if you know, she can either keep going, run this girl down, or she could, doesn't have to stop and pick her up, just has to slow down and not hit her, and, yeah, can continue driving. So this is the one where she has probably a genuine choice, whereas the Cooper one, she probably didn't feel like she had that genuine choice. She felt like it was either kill him or be killed.
Yeah.
But this one, she has a genuine choice. Mm-hmm. It's either escape and kill Paige or escape and not kill Paige, and she chose to kill her.
At this point, it's for revenge. It's for her own satisfaction to get, yeah,
and fair
them.
Play with that as well. Like, that bitch deserves some revenge.
So she drives, like, back to, like, the caravan park or whatever it is that she drives to, crashes the van and kind of walks into this party and then collapses. And so we're brought into the end. And I have many, many, many issues with this film, but I will fucking fight people who tell me that this is a bad ending, because I think this is one of the best endings to a film I've ever seen. If I'm honest.
Oh, I thought you meant a bad ending as just in a bad outcome. Because it's a bad outcome.
It is a bad outcome. It's a dark ending, but yeah. I love it. I think it's great. It's my favourite part of this film. 100%.
Go on, Lucy. Go on.
I'm sorry, I don't like this ending. it's probably my least favourite part, to be honest. I'm just not a fan of it.
Why?
I just felt like it could have ended with... I don't know, if Jenny was going to go in the revenge route, they could have really done a full revenge ending. I don't know. I just feel like that... I mean, we're all entitled to our own opinions, but I just feel like they could have... I don't know. It just left me not feeling satisfied with it, you know what I mean? I felt like it could have been a proper revenge and she could have balls to the wall at the bloody end.
I think if you go that route, though, you're in real danger in that point of turning this into a completely different film, aren't you?
Like, well, yeah.
You know, I think that would have changed the entire tone of this film. And we obviously have a lot of issues with the sort of undercurrent of the themes in this movie. So maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing, you know. But I think it would have been a very different film, I think, if we'd gotten that sort of big revenge. I get what you're saying, because we do want to see her get revenge on these kids. She's definitely been through it. I don't know. I'm inclined to agree with Lindsay, for the first time, and it feels like ever. But I do see your point, Lucy. Like, I do see, because you do want her to get that revenge, and ultimately, you know, she gets revenge on Cooper and Paige, and those are actually two who really don't do anything. Cooper obviously gets forced to. He's the one who stabs Steve in the mouth. But aside from that, what does Cooper actually do? Aside from that, what does Paige actually do? They don't actually participate in the abuse. Obviously, Paige does the filming, but she really gets revenge on the two that didn't do anything. So I get that. I get that you maybe want to see a bit more satisfaction. Maybe even if it's not Brett, even if it was one of the other ones.
Oh,
no, you go ahead.
No, it was just my last point on it. Just that when we were talking earlier about the classism and the otherism and seeing, you know, these kids and even the adults of the parents of these kids, it's like hooligans and dangerous. I feel like it kind of plays into that in the ending as well. The adults, I mean, I can understand it from the adults' perspective because their kids have died. But I don't know. I feel like it almost plays into that stereotype a little bit. I don't know if you guys got that as well.
It definitely does, because, you know, I think what the director has tried to do, and this is not me standing up for the director in any way, but I think what he's tried to do here is say these kids are like this because the exact same dynamic exists with the parents. And so it's learned behavior. I think that's what they're trying to show here.
Yeah, you can kind of see it in, because we're not told who each child belongs to in terms of the adults, but, you know, Cooper throughout the whole thing is kind of maybe we've gone too far, I want to go home, blah, 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 and Brett just plies him with drugs, and then one of the other adults in the situation is I don't know about this, maybe we should just phone the police, and so there's that mirroring there.
Yeah, I think that's one of the sort of strong things that does, I say strong things, but it's one of the things that comes through with this ending of this film. I mean, in terms of, it's not a fucking happy ending. this is grim as fuck as well. And it's, you know, that final image of Brett not really having any remorse, looking sort of posing in his mirror with Steve's sunglasses on, and in the background you just have that's her real name. You have Jenny's screams in the background. It's very reminiscent as well of Adam's death as well, where, you know, you've just got him scurrying in the background and something else on screen happening.
I feel like in a better movie this could have been used to show the cyclical nature of poverty and how if we don't do anything about it, these things will just keep happening and happening, because obviously it's very clear in that scene that Brett's just like, you already see that he's just going to be just like his dad. So I did kind of like, I did kind of like that end scene of like Brett just kind of putting on the glasses, deleting the videos, and just kind of like, right, like, pull yourself together, this is just how it is.
Tomorrow's probably a new day.
Yeah, probably like how his dad was like when he was younger. But yeah, I love this. I love a dark ending, and I love this one especially.
Well, there we go. At least you love something in this film.
One thing. do you guys have any other points that you want to raise about the film?
No, for me, I think we've covered the topics that I wanted to cover in terms of kind of linking it to our theme of the month. I did feel like, you know, it was kind of taking all the things we were doing before in reverse and looking at the, you know, we were talking about all these things like we've talked about toxic masculinity and you know, the male gaze in this movie. And I think those are still things that you do need to talk about as well when you're talking about the portrayal of women on screen. I think those are important things to talk about. So I'll forever defend my choice of this movie for picking it for this month. But yeah, aside from that, no, I think we've covered everything else. I don't know if Lucy has any other points, but that's kind of it for me. All my notes are covered.
No, I'm the same. I think we covered everything. The things that I wanted to touch on was kind of about that classism side of things, and you were mentioning it as well, Lindsay, about broken Britain and the political stance at the time. So but I think we've covered everything, to be honest.
Okie dokes. So with that being said, let's get into the movie trivia. So the budget for this film was $2 million. And I couldn't find an exact figure for the box office, but they all seem to range from $3.9 to $4.3 million. So pretty good.
Doubled this money, I guess, but it's...
I think for a film as well, I had never heard of this beforehand. So I'm kind of, for like a really underground film, I feel like that's quite good.
I don't remember this getting a big theatrical release. Like, I don't remember seeing this film being about. I don't really remember it being talked about at the time. I don't know if like you guys will remember it. I know you were a little bit younger, Lucy, so I don't know how much you would remember. You were 13, I'm sure you remembered, but I don't really remember it. And obviously, it's been on streaming services. I don't know what streaming service it's on just now.
Shudder.
Is it Shudder it's on? It's been on various streaming services. I think it's been on Netflix and Prime and all that in its years. So, you know, it will have made a good chunk of money.
Yeah, definitely. So I couldn't find a huge amount of trivia for this film. These are kind of more like goofs.
they were many. There's three of us right here.
So in the final scene where Brett's deleting the videos off his phone, the video files are actually far too small to be videos. One of them very noticeably is 29 kilobytes, so like far too small to be a film. So there's a goof there.
That was his dick pic.
And the sat nav that Jenny and Steve are using says that they're going to Slapton Quarry, which is in Devon, the southwest of England, whereas it actually appears from filming locations that they're in the southeast of England.
Those dirty bastards. The filmers, not the people of the southeast of England.
And lastly, Bonnie the Rottweiler is actually a wee boy and not a wee girl, so there you go.
Little floofer. Oh. All floofers are good floofers. Well, I think it's safe to say there's not going to be a fucking TikTok video in the trivia of this film.
No. I mean, one of the things I hate as well, like, people, I think Rottweilers have a reputation for being violent dogs, and they're not. They're so sweethearts, cute.
Aren't they?
They are.
And, like, as soon as I seen Bonnie, I was just like, oh, I love that one. I just think they're so silly and I think they're so cute.
They are, they're daft as fuck.
Yeah. I was going to say I really want one, but I don't think I could handle a big dog. It already takes up enough room in my bed, fuck's sake. Have you guys got any trivia?
No.
No. Soz.
That's fine.
just like a thunk. Fuck. We can stop speaking about this shitty movie now.
So let's get into our final ratings.
Yes, let's.
IMDb rated this a 6.8. Metacritic gave it a 65%. So let's play our favourite game. I guess the Rotten Tomatoes ratings. So what do you think the critics rated it, Lucy?
I'm going to go a bit lower because we know the critics aren't always the nicest, especially with horror movies. I'm going to give it 45.
Scathing. I'm gonna go higher because I think I think a lot of them are right-leaning motherfuckers, and I think they think this film's got some really good, you know, really good representation of what things are like in these areas. So I think they'll have rated it higher. I'm gonna go for 75.
Big difference there.
Oof. It's a big difference. And Ian, you're fucking spot on.
Fucking get in there! Woo!
The rating is 79 because the media are fucking right. So Ian, what do you think the audience rated it?
I think that I don't think the audience will have rated it quite as high, but I still think a lot of them will have been along with some of the critics there, so I'm going to go for 60.
Lucy?
I'm going to go higher than 45 this time. I'll go 55.
Ian takes it again. The audience rated it 66%.
Yes! I'm on a roll. Can I just say, because I'm keeping track of all this and I've already like caught up half of your two scores from all those episodes that I hosted, so just saying, I'm clearly the guru. I promise I'm not cheating.
I was actually going to ask you because you were so close.
I'm just that good.
So the Rotten Tomatoes critics consensus is that Eden Lake is a brutal and effective British hoodie horror that, despite the cliches, stays on the right side of scary. What do you think of that?
Bullshit. Despite its cliches,
I wouldn't call this a movie very cliche.
I think more just in spite of its demonization of an entire population of people, it remains scary. I think that would have been a more accurate statement.
Well, true. Very true. So let's get into our ratings. Lucy, what do you rate Eden Lake out of 10?
I'm going to be really interested to see what you guys say. I hope you don't think I'm too savage. But I think this movie does have its redeeming qualities, and I understand even why you picked it for this month and the discussions that we've had amongst about it.
Vindication.
But just like I think, especially, I know we talked about it a little bit, the special effects in this are really good. The gory parts are done really, really well. Mm-hmm. I think Jack O'Connell, who plays Brett, who's also like played really iconic British roles as well, like Cook and Skins, I think he's really good in this. Like, you really hate him as a character. But I just, partly because of the ending and the stereotypes and everything, I have to give it a 3.
Oh, scathing review. review from Lucy.
And I'm usually quite a high rater, yeah, but she's like the
generous. She's the generous one. Wow, 3. Okay.
Yeah, you didn't like out of 10.
How the fuck do I follow that? The thing with this film is, if you take politics out of this film, objectively, this is quite a good film. Like, if you take that, if you take away the classism, the stereotyping of working class people, if you take away all the other stuff that we've been talking about, and you just look at it purely as a horror film, nothing else, I think this is a good film. But it's got so much shitty social commentary in it that is just missing the mark so hard that it does put a big old dampener on this movie. Not to mention the fact that the film itself, even though I'm saying it's a good film, it's not flawless. The characters do make stupid decisions, they do things that they shouldn't do, you know, and in spite of the fact that we really shouldn't hate the kids, you still kind of get sucked into hating the kids. And yeah, it's got some brutal death scenes. You know, Adam's death is particularly hard watch. The end scene is, I'm with you, Lindsay, on the ending. I really like this ending, but I see Lucy's point of view. I'm going to give this a 5 out of 10.
I'm not sure what else I can say that hasn't already been said. Like, the demonization of the working class in this film just irks me so much. I don't think the film lives up to the hype. Like, I've seen a lot of people give this film a lot of praise, and I was just ultimately very disappointed. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10.
Yeah. Right in the middle there.
See, that my rating doesn't seem so savage now, does it?
You are the lowest, you savage bitch.
See, before I came on, like, because I'd seen so many positive reviews, I was like, oh my god, I'm going to be the only person who hates this film. And I thought, like, 4, like, I'm like, I'm taking it too far. Like, that's a lot, Lindsay. You calm down. But, like, you know, I'm glad you're all kind of on the same wavelength as this.
Take a chill pill, hen. Oh, dear. Okay, so our scores and the critic scores combined gives Eden Lake an average rating of 6.2 out of 10. So fuck you, Rotten Tomatoes critics. It puts it in 56th place of the now 90 movies that we have covered. Ooh. On the podcast. So it's on the bottom end of average, I would say. It's not quite down there with, you know, the Slendermans and the Birdemics and the Jennifer's Bodies and things like that. But, you know, it's not up there with the Halloweens and the Miseries and stuff like that. But it's one place below Insidious, which has got the same score as The Perfection. It's 2 places below that. And 1 place above Sinister.
I hate all those movies. It's in a great place.
What, The Perfection?
No, not The Perfection. I love that.
I still feel like a little bit of your soul died last week during that episode, where it wasn't just wall-to-wall love.
No, I feel like I got lots of love.
Okay. You got 6.5.
Yeah, but that was because of the critics, not us. I think you rated it lowest and it was a 7, and I was like, 7's good.
Okay, that's fine. Just need to know where that acceptable line is.
I even said that. I was like, no, 7's a good score.
Oh, like, I don't listen to what you say.
I know.
It's fine, you don't listen to what I say either.
No. See, when I'm not hosting at this point, I'm on my phone, I'm not listening.
Why do you think I keep going like that?
Well, at least we're honest.
Lucy's like, I've been paying attention the whole time. I always pay attention. What are you talking about?
This is the best one, that's why.
Anyways.
Oh, thanks.
Good job. Did you forget you were hosting there, Lindsay?
Just a bit. So that's the show. No, I've got listeners of opinions. I forgot about them. So
we probably want to hear what they have to say as well. Yeah.
Based on what I watched, we probably don't.
I mean, I remember after we did Friday the 13th Part 2, I was like, oh my god, we've just shot on everyone's favourite film. And I felt really bad, but I don't feel bad this time.
No, it's fine. It's fine. They're all just wrong.
So, friend of the show, Tony, said that she's never been disturbed by a horror movie before, but I watched this for the first time a year ago and she'd never watch it again because it broke her.
Tony.
I do kind of, when you were saying, Ian, like if you kind of maybe take the political message out of it, like I feel like maybe if this had been set in America, then maybe I would have got that. Yeah. But because they made it about like poor working class community in the UK, you know, basically that's where I live, it irked me a lot more. So maybe if it was set in a different country, I would have got that, but
I think that's right. I think it hits a little bit too close to home for us, doesn't it?
Yeah. Louise said that she remembers thinking it didn't really live up to the hype. They've seen similar movies that did the brutal shock factor better.
I'd go with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Ash loves this film. The ending still gets her every time. She's glad that this film is starting to get the recognition it deserves.
The fucking don't listen to the rest of this episode then.
Saws Ash. Not looking forward to disappoint me on Twitter. I love Ash, she's so cute. She's always like screenshots that she's listed. And she's just like, and then like when I've been on the Twitter, I'm like, oh, let me know what you think. And then she's always like, I loved it. Like, I love you, you're so fucking cute.
Sorry, Ash.
We do love you, Ash, but your taste in this film's arse.
Beth Metal Death said that she full on shouted at the TV if there was a tick box of bad choices to get you into more trouble, that couple ticked every box. Definitely.
Steve.
Like far too confrontational.
Steve ticked every box.
Do some meditation. Yes. Like, get some yoga in here. Like,
go fucking. Go
some mindfulness.
Go to fucking therapy.
And Cats and Cucumber said that it made them want to shower and scrub thrice over after watching it.
Not once, not twice, but thrice.
It does what it sets out to achieve very effectively, but not a piece of entertainment I'd return to in a hurry.
Yeah, I'm in no hurry to watch this again.
I'm really excited to never watch this film again.
Is this the first week we've not had one from Galileo?
I know. Oh, I feel inclined to check now.
Is she okay?
I pulled these on Tuesday, and on Tuesday she wrote a message saying that she was going to watch it. And
maybe she's done it later then. Hashtag
movies with Kate. So
I did put the thread up a bit earlier than I would normally do. I kind of got a bit carried away with myself on Monday. I was like, I need to put something out. So I put out this thread. So maybe you're right. Maybe we just missed it, but.
Oh, there's a way to go on Twitter there. It's Drag Race finale.
No spoilers.
Galileo.
I'm sorry, Galileo, you're not featured in this episode today.
I mean, you've just gotten a whole, 2 minutes there to yourself, so it's fine. If you commented, we'll read you out next week, okay?
Of course I will. So I think that is actually it now, guys.
That is it.
That's it. Lucy, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter and Twitch, Lulu_Pew, streaming Mondays and Fridays and Saturdays.
You forgot your cell there, didn't you?
I did. I mean, you can see it in my face. I was like, wait, what days do I stream?
Ian, where can everyone catch all this content gold that you're putting out on your own social media?
Own social media for just gripping tweets. You go to IanForrest12 with two R's.
We are on Twitter at Screams Behind. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Behind the Screams. We're also on TikTok at Behind the Screams Podcast. We're on Patreon. You can subscribe at the £1 and the £5 tier. At £1, you get the audio before everyone else, and at the £5 tier, you get the video and the audio version, so you can see our pretty faces while we chat about some of your favourite horror movies. we're on Twitch. Ian, when are we on Twitch?
Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. No Tuesdays.
Between Ian, Lucy, and Dave, we're on Twitch every single night of the week. So, yeah, definitely hop on and for that, because, yeah, the Twitch is going amazing, isn't it?
Twitch is going great, I think, for all of us just now. Yeah. We're all doing, I know Dave's doing really well, I know you've been doing really well, obviously, you know, we're all our own thing, we all stream our own sort of, we stick mostly to horror games, although I'm probably going to start moving into some more mainstream stuff as well, just because I want to. I know you do, Lucy obviously does the gay games. All the gay games and Mafia. That's what you'll find.
And Dragon Age. I'm doing Dragon Age right now. Going back into the role play fantasy style.
Yeah, and then Dave just does a whole shitload of Dark Souls.
He just likes to torture himself. That's what it is.
Yeah, so we play a whole variety of stuff. You know, I'm doing. What are you doing this weekend? Because I'm doing Blair Witch tomorrow.
What am I streaming?
Yeah.
Dragon Age.
Because
I did the reaction. Well, I did the reaction this evening with Rev on Life is Strange 3, Losing Our Minds. But yeah, we've started a new playthrough of Dragon Age Origins, and it's actually been really fun because so many people have been like talking about the nostalgia for that game. So yeah, if you want to see elven mages spell casting and also thirsting over fantasy characters, come over to my Twitch channel.
Yeah, and so yeah, like I say, I'm going to be redoing Blair Witch tomorrow, and then that's going to be fun. No doubt I'll crap myself many times like I did playing Alien Isolation last week, so that should be fun.
Which was very entertaining. If you want entertainment, just go to the Behind the Screens Twitch channel and just pop on a sound alert, because it's near guaranteed Ian will shit himself.
They're very, very... Dave keeps telling me my sound alerts are way too cheap.
They are. They're a bargain, folk. Get absolute them while they're
bargain.
Low.
Absolute bargain. Scare alerts for everyone. Even those working class folk.
Yes! we are back. What are we putting out on Sunday?
This Sunday is our interview. This Sunday, I was is our interview with Gemma Hurley. Yes, because this episode goes out next week.
Okay.
So for those, we are recording this on the 18th of March. So as of right now, our Sunday episode with Sophie hasn't gone out yet. But by the time this episode goes out, that episode will have gone out. And right. We'll have done our interview with Gemma Hurley.
Okay. I got a bit confused there.
We record a week behind.
I know, I forgot. So we've got our interview with Gemma Hurley. And next week is Lucy's Choice, our final Women in Horror Month movie. What do you pick, Lucy?
I was going to say we're going out with a banger, but we're really not. I'm sorry, folks. But no, this is a movie I've actually wanted to cover for a while. It's kind of infamous. It's teeth. I'm not saying infamous in a good way.
Oh no, but, I know. I've seen this movie so many times. I know. Well, no.
But yeah, like if you've not seen it, I feel like people have heard of this movie. I know, Lindsay, you've not seen it, so I'm very interested to see what you think. I won't go too much into detail about it, but there's going to be a lot of discussions about sex and representation of sexuality and religion and a bunch of other stuff, and it's just a little bit, I don't know how to describe it other than that without spoiling the plot, but if you know, you know. If you don't know, you're going to want to listen to this episode, because it's going to be an interesting discussion.
It's yeah, as a man, this movie hurts me.
I don't blame you.
I was going to say something, but I think I'll just know. For once in my life.
First time for everything. Fuck's sake.
I know.
So, just before you finish up, like you were saying, because obviously this has been a very special month as well. You know, we've covered a lot of movies. We've obviously done the interview with Emma, and we've got this interview with Gemma coming up as well. So we've done a lot. We're obviously still planning, hopefully, on doing our live Twitch show at the end of the month, which we're planning, I think, on doing a live sort of show on the last Saturday of every month. I think that's what we were sort of planning. Obviously, they're not always going to be particularly themed like this month and last month's ones were. When we get to those sorts of stages where we're maybe not doing a month thing, we will probably just be having a bit of a general chit-chat about what we've been doing and what we've been covering and things like that. But obviously, we haven't really officially announced that after this month, because obviously I've not been taking charge of these episodes, and it's been so good. I've so enjoyed not having to do the big job for the entire month. Obviously, I've still done the interviews and the episode with Sophie. But after this month, you guys will be continuing to take on at least your own episodes. Yeah,
we will be.
So for those who are listening, we obviously, as you are very much aware, we take it in turns to pick the movie. And so Lucy will host the episodes that I've got your pick in it. Lindsay will host her picks and I will host my picks. And that's going to be the new structure of the show going forward. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Give us all a bit of a break and things like that. Because my batteries are well and truly recharged after this month. It's been magic. So yeah, look forward to that, guys. That was it. You can finish.
So that's it till next time. So don't forget to join us on Behind the Screams.